The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Sorry, I had to have a swallow. I hadn't had a chance to have a sip of water since I got here.
Five words in.
It's like, hey, everybody, it's Tuesday.
We're here. The intro's still playing.
We're here. I mean, look, that's right. So, I mean, you know, why can't there be a little pause in there? I mean, I realized as I said that, man, I needed something to wet my throat. So I'm sorry about that. Took a swallow of water there. It's a nice day. It's not terribly humid. I've been outside a pretty good bit today, and
there's not a local ball game tonight.
No. There's not.
You have the game up in at the Hoover Met. Mm-hmm. So Auburn has played its last midweek
home game,
right? Like right. You've got conference games, including a big series this weekend.
Yeah, Oklahoma's coming in this weekend, and that will be the next to the last home series. Regular season home series, because Auburn very much in line for hosting at least a regional the way things are going right now. So yeah, I mean, Auburn just would like to keep things rolling after taking 2 out of 3 at Gainesville this past weekend, and they've had that extra day since they played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I'm excited about seeing how Griffin Graves does in his second start.
Oh, absolutely. I think that and we've seen already with Alvarez the idea that you can play your way into a larger role,
right,
with quality performances in the midweek. And at the very least, you could – I mean, Griffin's a guy who's – he's not a senior, right? Like, I mean, he's got –
No, he's just a sophomore.
Yeah, I was going to say multiple years of eligibility remaining. So, you know, it could be part of a larger plan. But Auburn has – because Auburn has several options as far as – pitchers to go to, both as starters and relievers. But I mean, Griffin's if he can put himself in the mix, that'd be great to see.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he was a guy that was expected to be in the weekend rotation, maybe even the Friday night starter back before spring camp got started. Left-hander who showed some signs last year, and then just had the had the injury which set him back and took a little longer than he would have liked to get back, but good to see him back, and he's had no repercussions from throwing his first 2 times out. And last week, he breezed through 3 innings against Alabama State. Only threw he threw less than 30 pitches in 3 innings last week. 3 perfect innings, by the way, against Alabama State. So yeah, looking forward to him going and seeing if Auburn can keep the bats going the way they have here over the last week or so.
Sure, and then we'll see how tonight sort of translates, because we haven't really seen a ton of momentum carry over from — we've seen frustrating games in the midweek, and then Auburn's
right.
Played pretty well over the weekend in the SEC. So,
you know, it's funny though. I mean, you think about it, and Auburn's 17-4 in 9 conference games. So, I mean, they lost to Cincinnati, Georgia Tech, Jack State. Who was the fourth? I mean, they've only lost 4 non conference games. So it seems like it. I guess you remember some of those losses because they feel like, man, you shouldn't have lost that one. But you are 17-4 against a schedule that included that trip out to Arlington as well.
I guess it would be like the last handful of midweek games, right? Because that Georgia Tech loss,
right?
And
yeah, Georgia Tech and Jack State, where you lost lost those 2 midweek games back to back.
Yeah, those were both relatively recent in the mind, but it's still and that came after you pulled Alvarez from the midweek and inserted him into the weekend rotation. So yeah, I mean, it's obviously huge for the mid majors too. You know, to get to play the major conference opponents, and you know, any time Auburn is facing a South Alabama or a Jack State, or tonight at Samford, right? Like any time they're playing a team like that, it's got outsized importance for the opponent. You know, who knows how many quad one games they get to play, how many opportunities they get against SEC caliber opposition. So yeah, it's we'll see how Auburn does tonight, and then this weekend just a really big series as Auburn, you know, wants to keep pace with the top of the conference, but also wants to solidify, like we were saying yesterday, wants to solidify that spot in the top eight, certainly in the top 16 when the postseason rolls around, so you can have baseball, postseason baseball at Plainsman Park.
Yeah, and right now, I mean, Auburn would have to stumble a bit, I believe, to fall out of the top 16. You know, top eight's a different thing. I mean, but again, I said it yesterday. I mean, if Auburn splits their final 12 conference games and goes 16-14, I think they're probably a top eight national seed. And, you know, it gets started with a series at home this weekend against Oklahoma. I mean, you sure can't take anything for granted because, I mean, every SEC team is capable. And Oklahoma's right there tied with Auburn at 10-8. So, I mean, it's a tough series. Look at who Auburn's got. They've got Oklahoma at home, and then they go to Texas A&M, who's 12-5. Auburn is taking on every team that Auburn plays for the rest of the year is no worse than tied with Auburn right now. And Auburn's tied for fourth in the SEC.
Is it 12 SEC games left?
And 12 SEC
they're
games.
They're all against teams ranked in the top 15 right
yes,
now?
Yes. I mean, Georgia,
in a couple polls?
Georgia's the top team in the conference at 13-5. Texas A&M's a half game back at 12-5. Then Mississippi State and Oklahoma are both 10-8, tied with Auburn. So, I mean, Texas, who Auburn already played, is the other team that's there in that upper half.
And I think the good news is, you know, depending on what the goal ultimately is, what your heart is set on, like that makes it very difficult for Auburn. It's going to be difficult for Auburn to keep pace with the top of the conference, namely Georgia, just because that's a gauntlet. Mm-hmm. And Auburn would need to win, I don't know, they got 10 wins right now. Like, you feel like Auburn would probably need to win 8 or 9 of those games.
To try to win the conference?
I mean, I don't know.
Well, the thing is, you do get Georgia, and you've got Georgia at home, and they're the top team. But
what's your guess the conference record of the conference champion at the end of the season this year will probably be?
20-10.
Okay. So for Auburn to get there with 12 games left, against that schedule, you'd need to win.
You'd need to go 10-2.
You need to go 10-2,
which is not very likely.
Like, right, exactly.
Against this competition,
if they do it, that would be remarkable.
You know what? If they're a top three national seed.
Oh, they're a top three national seed. They're probably the best Auburn team regular season wise in 50 years, mm-hmm. right? Because that's the last time Auburn won the regular season title in the SEC. So if they can do that, that would be remarkable. If they can't, I think the good news is, you probably only need to win 4 or 5 of these games to feel good about staying in the top 16.
Yeah, I think you'd need to win 5.
I think
for sure.
Five. Yeah,
if
five.
You go .500 in the league, you're probably still a top 16 team.
I think a 15-15 Auburn team with this non-conference schedule mm-hmm. is probably a top 16 seed. Anything better than that, and it's like you move from probably to assuredly. Right, and still you're talking about winning 5 of 12, 6 of 12, instead of 10 of 12. Now you need to win a couple of them, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like job's not done. Like you're not.
No. That's where I mean, when you get an opportunity at home, and you've got a really good Oklahoma team coming in this weekend, that's why it's really important to try to win the series first.
You could all but punch your ticket NCAA wise this weekend. I mean, to get to 13.
If you swept.
Yeah, to get to 13 with 9 left would be, you'd be in ideal position. Again, that's a tall ask against a team as good as Oklahoma, but you got them at home, and I think you feel pretty good about both the pitching and the bats starting to warm up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting. I mean, is Bristol Carter going to be back? And if so, where does he go in the lineup? What do you do? Do you move Mason McCrane down after the two games he had at leadoff? That's a good problem to have.
Do you consider Bristol at 9?
Maybe.
I mean, that's
second leadoff type thing.
I would think maybe, and then you maybe have, if Bristol heats up, you've got a guy on base for Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I think after, because you're right, after the weekend Mason just had, I get that you don't want to Wally Pip anybody necessarily, but
right.
I think that letting Mason stay in the leadoff spot for another weekend sounds like pretty sensible roster management. and then not only to give the lineup a bit of a spark, but also because he just played so well in that leadoff spot, mm-hmm. and gives
three homers in his two games at leadoff.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you wonder about moving him down, right? Like, you wonder if it's like, all right, well, maybe he should be. Maybe that's a two or
a
three hole
three guy. But I mean, Auburn's got some guys that with Rembert and Frelick,
sure,
and Guevara. I mean, those are guys that are legit number three hitters.
I mean,
as well.
I mean,
that's, you know, to me, yeah, that is the best spot. Now, it's changed a little bit because you have the philosophy now of let's get guys more at bats and move them up to the top of the order. But generally, your number three hitter is usually your best. He's just your best all-around hitter.
I mean, the thought of Bristol 1, Mason 2, or vice versa is interesting, but I don't think they're going to go that route. My guess would be one of those two guys is your nine-hole hitter. And after the weekend Mason had, again, winning freshman of the conference, mm-hmm. you know, SEC freshman of the week, that's pretty impressive stuff. And maybe he keeps the job for now.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be in the lineup. That's one thing.
Baseball America updated their SEC updated their NCAA tournament projection earlier today, with UCLA as the number one overall seed in the college baseball postseason. SEC teams in the top 16 include Texas at 2, Texas A&M at 6, Georgia at 7, Alabama at 9. Ole Miss at 12, Florida at 13, Oklahoma at 14, and Mississippi State at 16, plus the Auburn Tigers as the 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. Miami, UTSA, and Campbell are the other 3 teams in the Auburn Regional. As the 5 seed, you would play, that's the 12,
yes,
right? So that would be, mm-hmm. that would potentially set up, if this bracket were to hold, that would potentially set up Auburn Ole Miss as a super regional.
Wow.
In Auburn,
yep.
If
Chalk, yeah, the higher seed is going to host the super regional.
If Chalk held,
if they win it,
yeah. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. So I mean, it is a loaded conference as it always is. Should be another great weekend. We're going to talk with Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, here in about 15 minutes. He's getting set up there at the Hoover Met, so we'll check in with him at the bottom of the hour.
We've got basketball news. In fact, something pretty interesting happened today, and quickly, and we'll talk about maybe we'll do some of that, more of that in the next segment. Haven't really talked the NFL draft at all.
No, you're right, and it's this week. It's Thursday,
and Auburn has a guy in Keldrick Faulk who's one of the more interesting and one of the more polarizing prospects of the guys projected to go in the first round. I've seen some draft some mock drafts that have Keldrick going in the top 10, in the top 12. Teams like New Orleans, the Giants just made the trade. Dexter Lawrence was traded from the Bengals to the Giants. The Giants now have the 10th overall pick, mm-hmm. In addition to the 5th overall pick. Some folks have had Keldrick going to the Giants at 10. The Cowboys are in that mix as well. The Buccaneers need help with pass rush. So there's a spectrum. I mean, some folks have him at the very end of the first round. Other projections have him more comfortably in the first half of the first round. So I think there is some mystery with Keldrick as far as where he goes. I think one of the big storylines on Thursday night will be, is Ty Simpson going in the first round for Alabama? You have, you know, I think it's there's not a ton of intrigue about Fernando Mendoza going first overall to Las Vegas. Will he be the only quarterback going in the first round? And if he's not, will the other one be Ty Simpson? If so, where's Ty Simpson going to go? I think some folks view, I don't know, Bill, I'd be nervous about a quarterback who only played 1 year of college football. I think that there's maybe some,
some trepidation.
Well,
there.
It feels like there'd be like some learning on the job, mm-hmm. for a quarterback who only was a starter for 1 year, suddenly jumping into the NFL, especially. And if you take him in the first round, there's kind of the expectation that they have to play right away. I'm kind of surprised Ty Simpson didn't come back for another year of college football, just because it was his only year as a starter. Maybe he didn't need to come back to Alabama. Like, maybe he needed to find a new home and needed to move on from, maybe not. I mean, I think Alabama would probably be,
yeah, it's not like, not as though you can't make it to the NFL from there.
Yeah, and I don't know like what happened behind the scenes and if the situation turned to where he needed to leave or anything like that, but I would think that
I don't think that was the case.
Well, if he'd stayed, he would be one of the trendy quarterbacks as far as guys who are going to have a big season
in 2026. Yeah, no question
maybe,
about that.
Maybe the Heisman favorite, right? Like, you know, if he decided to stay.
He'd be up there.
Yeah.
He'd be among them for sure.
I think he'd be among them. Instead, he's going to a pretty uncertain, seemingly, NFL future. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if the first round ended on Thursday night and Ty Simpson was still on the board. And it's a situation where people are talking about, like, is he – should a team that doesn't need a quarterback – make a trade early on so that one of the quarterback hungry teams, or maybe there's a quarterback hungry team picking early in the second round.
Yeah, maybe.
If not, maybe somebody makes a deal. We've seen situations like that before where the big quarterback slips out of the first round and is a very hot property early in the second. I could see that happening if Ty Simpson isn't taken in the first round. Curious to see how early Kieron goes. I know that there's been a lot of buzz about Kieron Crawford's NFL future as well, so Keldrick's probably the biggest story to watch, you know, from an Auburn standpoint. But beyond that, could hear some other names called over the course of the draft, maybe even the second day when it comes to Kieron Crawford.
All right, we will get to our first break. Yeah, we'll update some basketball news more when we come back. Hey, you can join us 334-321-1390, and then don't forget, bottom of the hour, we're going to be checking in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, from Birmingham, as he's getting ready to call Auburn and Samford tonight. But we're just underway here on the Monday Drive, so come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Again, we're going to check in with Andy Burcham in about 10 minutes or so. We can obviously talk baseball with him, talk a little transfer portal news as Auburn has added players. They lost players. We've talked about that. And one of the players that entered the portal for Auburn didn't take long for him to find his landing spot. And it's not a shock. A lot of times you see players enter the portal and, I mean, within 48 hours, they have a destination, which means there was probably a little thought put into where he would be headed, where he could be landing when he entered the portal,
or bids were submitted very quickly.
Yes,
or time was of the essence, and they said we're not going to wait.
He's staying in. Sebastian Williams Adams is staying in the Southeastern Conference, and will be headed to a Nashville, Tennessee. Will be a Vanderbilt Commodore. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's a big pickup for Mark Byington and a Vanderbilt team that's still waiting to find out about Tyler Tanner, right? Like, I think he's doing the whole NBA draft,
right?
Could come back. If he comes back, he's probably your preseason player of the year. And the thought that he could have Sebastian Williams Adams, among others, as his running mates, they've done a good job building that roster year over year. And you know, Byington was rumored for other jobs because all he's done since showing up there is winning. It's a bummer because I think in the case of Sebastian and Filipjovic and Elijah Freeman, you thought you were watching guys develop with Auburn.
Now you're going to get an opportunity to play two of them next year.
Yeah, at least. Now you've seen two of them stay in the league, in Freeman going to Texas and Sebastian going to Vanderbilt, and it's just, now you feel like you maybe developed a couple of players for conference rivals,
right?
which is a crummy feeling. And I can understand why Steven might be really careful about, I think the approach needs to be a freshman who can't help you next year, like a high school senior that's not going to be in the rotation immediately. You got to think twice about, like, well, to what end are you bringing that player in? Like, if it's a player that's not going to be able to help you next year,
yeah, that's right.
Then, I mean, you can slowly bring them along and maybe hope that could be like a Simon Walker situation where they play a little bit in year one and then maybe you hope that they can break into the rotation in year two.
Yeah, but with Simon, if he hadn't gotten hurt,
exactly,
it might have been the same type thing. So you don't know.
Yeah, and you don't, like, it's hard to point to that and say, well that went according to plan,
right?
Like, well, that's what you should.
Let's hurt his foot, so he can't play.
Yeah, it's like misery, right? Let's hobble the kids when they show up. No, so it's I can understand why coaches, unlike football, where I do understand the benefit of having backup plans on the roster
right.
that you're maybe you're hoping can be part of,
yeah, it's
of next
year. A little
year.
Different, 85, you know, 85 exactly. or 105, whatever. What is the roster limit now?
Who knows?
But if, whatever, it's a lot more than 15.
But if
it's multiples of 15.
And if it's a high school senior that you think can step in and help you immediately, that's a little bit different. Right, and maybe
right.
although then I think you still need to weigh the risk of that versus a college senior in the portal
mm-hmm.
and how much they could potentially help you, especially when there's no guarantee that freshman is going to be part of the long term plan. And for Auburn now, you have three guys in Sebastian, Elijah, and Phillip that you were hoping I think were part of something long term, and they're all going to play somewhere else.
Simon's the only guy left from last year's signing class, isn't he?
A Porum.
That's right.
Technically, yeah. I mean, so
Simon and Mech are the yeah. only ones.
And Overton, I guess, would technically be.
Yeah,
part of
I'm thinking of freshmen.
Sure.
Of the freshmen
slash
from last
college,
year,
yeah.
because you have Magwood and mm-hmm. Sway and mm-hmm. Phillip and
Bashir.
Yeah. So.
No, I mean considerable. I think for the hope that like, okay, well you're going young. Like this time last year,
mm-hmm.
it's like, well you're going young, but a lot of them could be multi-year. Sort of deals,
and most of them yeah. are one and gone
yeah.
somewhere else.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's not. I don't think that's evidence of like Steven not doing a good job. I don't think that's evidence of, and I don't think that's even a failing of the players necessarily. That's the era we're in.
Oh yeah,
like, that's
you're
a
right.
sign
you're
of the
right.
times. And if it happens every year, and your roster of your underclassmen is constantly breaking apart, you could have a problem on your hands. But I'm willing to chalk up like a 1 year sort of deal to you went really young. And some of those players played really well and got offers elsewhere. And some of those players didn't play and are exploring.
Wanted to find some place yeah. where they could. So yeah, I mean, it is a tough situation recruiting now. And I think you're seeing teams be much more judicious with the number of players they sign. I mean, if you've got a half dozen openings, you're probably not going to sign more than three players, and you're going to go out and try to get at least three transfers.
It's especially painful to see them stay in the conference.
Yes, indeed.
Too. And I don't know how often. Maybe this is like the Auburn-centric aspect of it. Maybe this is a normal thing that every program goes through. But to see Aiden go to Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and to see now to see
Elijah
Sebastian,
to Texas, yeah.
I mean, you could have three former Auburn players starting elsewhere in the SEC next year,
right?
And pretty good ones. Right, so it's like that's, and I don't know how common that is in college basketball. I don't know if Carolina or Duke or, you know what I mean. Name a power conference, Kansas. I don't know if they're dealing with that. Like,
yeah,
former players.
That's a good question. I was trying to think about. I mean, so many players transfer that I'm sure that it happens, but it does. It feels like the players are staying in the league more. After they leave Auburn.
And maybe that's part of being in the SEC,
yeah.
too, is you get used
well,
to
I'm
SEC.
I'm sure part of it is also the orange and blue glasses. We know where these yeah. guys are, and you may not know where everybody who left every other school wound up, but it seems like if they were prominent players, starters, it would be much easier to spot.
It's interesting that the two Southerners stayed in the South, right, stayed in the relative Southeast,
yeah, that's true.
And Phillip had – less allegiance to the yeah. Southeast and went to Los Angeles. But it's like, yeah, the thought that you're going to be seeing both those guys in the conference, it hurts. And I imagine, yeah, some of that was they got used to SEC creature comforts. Some of that, too, is, I mean, look at the teams Auburn lost transfers to, right? UCLA,
yeah.
Texas, and Vanderbilt, who are, I think, probably going to go into the next year as, I think all three of them will be in the top 25. And maybe, you know, I mean, Texas has done very well. Like Texas has done,
yes.
like they've done very well for themselves, keeping Vokatitis, going out and getting some other transfers, adding Elijah Freeman now to that list. And again, Vanderbilt's in a similar situation Auburn was in last year, where they're waiting on Tyler Tanner,
mm-hmm.
and he's got a very real decision to make. Some folks are talking about him as a first round pick. He was fantastic. Like he was good,
he
was excellent this past year. But if he came back, he would be incredibly valuable to Vanderbilt, and he would be one of the big stars of the SEC next year. So he's got a decision to make. Florida doing very well in the portal, getting the news today that Hauk is coming back.
Yeah, Thomas Hauk is coming back, yeah. But is Todd Golden going to be is he going to be there?
That's an interesting question. And will those players be there if he's not?
Yeah,
they already got the news that Kondo's back. Chinyelu's in the draft, but says he's coming back to Florida if he comes back to college basketball. The thought that a team could return those three in the front court is madness.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely if Todd Golden is back, if all those guys are back, Todd Golden's coaching them, they're your preseason number one next year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that front court is absolute madness. The reason Bill mentions Todd Golden is we have a couple of pieces of NBA news.
Yes, indeed.
One of them, Billy Donovan, out in Chicago after six seasons, I believe. Billy's been in the NBA since the early 2010s when he left Florida for Oklahoma City. There have been rumors throughout his NBA tenure.
Mm-hmm.
It's like seasonal.
Right. Single year, it's like, is Billy Donovan coming back to college basketball?
Rumors about Billy Donovan. It's been a long time.
Yeah, but there will be plenty of schools that would love to find out if he's interested in coming back.
Not just because he used to be a national champion head coach of the Florida Gators.
That doesn't hurt.
No. But the reason this reminds me of when Spurrier left Washington and there was sort of a season of waiting to see where Spurrier was going to land before he ended up picking South Carolina. I could see next year, if Billy Donovan genuinely wants to be the head coach of a college basketball team again, there could be constant buzz about potential landing spots for Billy Donovan. And I think it only ratchets up the pressure on a couple of coaches that were already feeling some heat, including Mark Pope, who all got the 1-2 punch today of Kentucky is viewed as probably the runner-up for Sebastian Williams-Adams, plus Billy Donovan is now unemployed in college basketball. So, and Todd Golden, the other piece of news, you mentioned Todd Golden, and could he be there? The reason Bill mentioned that is because Steve Kerr is, I guess the reports are, likely Steve Kerr has coached his final game as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors after one of the great runs by a coach in the history of the NBA, if it is indeed over for Steve Kerr. The rumors are that Golden State's top choice could be former
USF head coach Todd Golden, who made some very good contacts and apparently has some really good relationships with Warriors front office folks.
Yeah. Did well for himself with Warriors ownership and management when he was the head coach of the Dons. I think that it'll be. It'll be interesting to see what kind of shakeups we have there with college coaches potentially being targeted for a couple of NBA vacancies.
Yep. All right. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Andy Burcham from Birmingham when we come back. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're going to head to The Drive hotline as we welcome in the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, up in Birmingham, getting ready another outing for the Tigers tonight as Auburn taking on Samford at the Hoover Mitt. Andy, how you doing?
Bill, I'm doing very well, thank you. It's a gorgeous night for baseball here, gorgeous evening, early evening, late afternoon here. In Hoover, getting ready for this ball game. Of course, the first of two trips that Auburn will make to this ballpark a month from now. We'll be back here for the SEC tournament.
Yeah, Auburn always likes to play a game there in the Met before the SEC tournament, and the Bulldogs are the opponent tonight.
Samford comes in after a sweep of UNC Greensboro over the weekend. Auburn comes in, of course, after an impressive series win at Florida, Auburn's first against the Gators since 2013 in Florida, in Gainesville. So both of these teams bring momentum in tonight, and we'll see Griffin Graves get his second career start and his second start in as many weeks here tonight. I think Auburn's looking, if Griffin is effective, maybe for an inning or two more after his three perfect innings last week in the win against Alabama State.
Yeah, we were talking about it a little bit early on, Andy. I mean, that was a breeze for Griffin against Alabama State, and great to see him back out there and just adding another weapon to the arsenal that Butch Thompson has there on the pitching staff.
Well, Auburn is in good a shape from a starting pitching performance at this time of the year as I can remember. With four quality guys that all have been and can be starters for Auburn on the weekend. And, you know, we don't know what the rest of this season holds for Griffin Graves, but if he can continue to strengthen, continue to, take out that three innings from last week, let's say he gets four or five tonight, then what does he do in a couple weeks when Auburn has its next road game here in the Birmingham area, downtown against UAB, and then all of a sudden you potentially could have five quality starters. And Bill, I mean, you've been around this longer than I have. I don't remember an Auburn team at this time of the year with four quality starters on the weekend, and who knows what you could get from Griffin Graves between now and the end of the regular season.
No, you're right about that, Andy. I mean, I'd go back probably go back to the days of Joe Beckwith and company to maybe be able to have four, and this gives you a possibility of five. And you know, you may not need that many starters in a regional or especially a super regional, but I mean the SEC tournament, you definitely
Absolutely.
Could. It makes a situation where, look, you never want to think about playing from the loser's bracket, but when you do, you've got to make that up. You're playing extra ball games, and it is a luxury, a bonus, to be able to have so many quality arms that can go out there and give you multiple innings.
Well, there is no loser's bracket anymore in the SEC tournament. It's single elimination.
Oh, that's right.
But you could be here from Tuesday through Sunday if you continue to win, and that's where those extra starters can play a factor. You might need four starters in a regional unless you do what Auburn has done the last couple of times it's played in a regional, and that's sweep a regional. But when you get to the postseason, those extra starters can be incredibly valuable. And let's say Auburn keeps it the way it is right now. I mean, Jackson Sanders has been as good as anybody on a weekend
right.
for Auburn. And as a starter – and as a reliever in two of the last three weekends for Auburn, in the one weekend that he wasn't a good reliever, he didn't pitch.
Right, Auburn
didn't
need him.
He didn't pitch in that series 2 weeks ago against Kentucky, but he was absolutely needed in two of the three series in the last 3 weeks. So you're in very good shape. From a starting pitching performance, you're in better shape than you perhaps thought you would be after you lost Drew Whalen to Tommy John surgery, because that was a guy that could be a long reliever or a middle reliever for you on the weekends. And I think Auburn was looking for that guy once they lost him. And when Auburn moved Andres Alvarez to the weekend, then that freed up Jackson Sanders to be a guy that could start for you or a guy that could come in and give you four or five quality innings on a weekend, like a starter, but in relief for the Tigers.
Yeah, sort of like, and Butch talked about it earlier this season, you know, looking for that guy that could fill Carson Meyer's role. And that's exactly what Jackson's been able to do in spectacular fashion.
No question about it. And Auburn likes what it has seen of late from an A. Chancellor.
Yeah, how about him the other night?
Look at the work that he did for Auburn on Thursday night. His work on Thursday night allowed Auburn to preserve the rest of its bullpen. And that was when Auburn came back and had a chance to win that. But it did not have to go on the weekend in that first game to Orion Hetzler, who pitched both Friday and Saturday for the Tigers. Florida, on the other hand, did go to its closer, even in a winning performance. And the second time he came around in that series, he wasn't nearly as effective for the Gators. So Abe Chancellor is one of those diamond in the rough performances for Auburn last weekend. And the thing that you hope most of all from Abe is that he continues to improve and continues to be a guy that you can count on now on the SEC weekends.
So, I mean, pitching, yeah, there's no question. Pitching has been, you know, the strong point for Auburn all year long. I really, you know, I thought heading into the season that that would be nice. I didn't expect that to be the case. The hitting has started to come around here over the last couple of weeks. First of all, I guess my first question is, what's the status of Bristol Carter?
It's a good question. We have not seen a lineup card yet. So I don't know about Bristol in this one tonight, but it brings up the incredible work that Mason McCrane did in his stead.
Yes, indeed.
Last week. Now, this is a guy that had not been not only not leading off for Auburn, hadn't even been in the lineup of late for Auburn. And with Bristol out last weekend for all three of those ball games for the Tigers, the work that Mason did at the top of that lineup, hit three home runs, and they were big home runs
right in
that series for Auburn. And played very well, and right field has a terrific arm for the Tigers. We understand maybe Bristol Carter does go for Auburn tonight. We, again, have not seen the lineup yet, but the indication is perhaps they get Bristol back tonight. And that's certainly good news to have the disruptor back. It just gives you more depth. It gives you your best base stealer. It gives you your best center fielder. And then you can move Mason McCrane down a little bit in the order. I don't know, maybe he bats second. Maybe he bats in the nine hole to try and springboard you back to the top of the order. We'll know that when the lineup comes out.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I mean, another opportunity. We were talking about it a little while ago. Now the fact that Auburn up to 10-8 in conference play, you want to get this one taken care of, obviously, and not be looking ahead. But Oklahoma coming in, man, Auburn's schedule here, the second half of this schedule, starting with last week. I mean, it is every team that Auburn plays from this point on in the conference is at least tied with the Tigers.
Yeah, that strength of schedule is not going to hurt at all down the stretch of this season, nor Auburn's RPI. And Auburn has the number one strength of schedule right now and the number five RPI. And I think that will go up with the likes of Oklahoma this weekend and A&M weekend, or A&M and Mississippi State in back-to-back road weekends before an explosive offense in Georgia comes to town to close out the SEC regular season. So it is a brutal schedule for Auburn. It is a great opportunity for Auburn as well to strengthen its seed for the SEC tournament and to strengthen a seed perhaps for a host of the NCAA tournament and in a regional and for a super regional as well. So that's the opportunity that Auburn has with this schedule down the stretch of this season.
Talking with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, this has been a very busy week and weekend. Ooh. I mean, obviously, A-Day with a good crowd there on hand. I'd love to get your thoughts on Alex Golish's first squad out there this past Saturday.
I loved the pace of play early in that scrimmage. I'll be honest with you, it caught me off guard a little bit how quickly Auburn was getting to the line of scrimmage. And not looking to the sideline for a call. It was get to the line of scrimmage and run the play for Auburn. I liked some of the depth that we saw on Saturday. We did not see Byron Brown at his best because he was not live. And Byron Brown at his best is a threat to run it and a threat to throw it for the Tigers. And I think that took him out of half of his game on Saturday. But I liked what I saw at the quarterback spot. I like the depth that Auburn has at tailback. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for the regular season coming up with Baylor starting in August in Atlanta. We didn't see everything from the Auburn defense either.
No.
But I liked what I saw all over the field for Auburn. I thought Auburn answered some questions, at least through spring ball, with some depth up front defensively. Kind of like what you saw from Jared Smith in that game. I liked what I saw from the corners, and that was a question mark, I thought, for Auburn going into spring ball. I think it's still a work in progress offensive line because of a couple guys, Ramil Stanton and Zierer, that did not play in the spring game. I think both of those guys figure in somehow to Auburn up front offensively. I liked what I saw from the wide receivers, both guys that were brand new to Auburn and guys that were returning to Auburn and getting another chance for the Tigers. So I liked what I saw. And the kickers, I mean, Alex McPherson is exactly what you want.
He's
exactly
back.
How he finished last season. The one thing that we really did not see is anything in the return game. So I don't know. I don't know who are the guys right now in the return game for kickoff return and punt return at this point. I thought it was a beautiful day. It was a great crowd. Bill, I was there early. That's no surprise to anyone, including my wife, Jan. I got there in time for Tiger Walk and walked in right at the end of Tiger Walk inside. And at 12 o'clock, they opened the doors and folks were coming in to find their general admission seat for Saturday. And one of the very cool things, and I text Brad during that Auburn baseball game on Saturday, that thrilling come from behind win for Auburn. What was so cool to me is while folks were waiting for the start of the A-Day game, and that was a great idea by the folks at Auburn to put the video board on the Auburn baseball game in Florida, the Auburn softball game in Florida, and Auburn women's tennis, actually in the semifinals before Auburn won the SEC tournament on Sunday. But just watch how engaged the fans were while waiting for a spring football game at what Auburn was doing. That turned out to be a really good day for Auburn on Saturday. And it was fun to watch the reaction of the Auburn fans, the Auburn family, watching those games on the video board as they were getting ready for that spring game on Saturday. I thought it was a fun day to be at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
No, you're absolutely right. It was a great day. I will say that on my depth chart right now, and guys, we've seen just when we've gone out there, I would Rayshon Pleasant, who wasn't out there, you would expect him to be one of the return guys. And I believe Omar Mabson's getting a long look there. But punt return, one of the stars of the spring game, Deshaun Spencer, I think is going to be a guy that could figure in there along with Bryce Kane.
Well, if there was a guy that came out of the blue from that perspective, it was him. And all, he had 9 catches for 93 yards in the game. Duke Smith, I thought, had a really good game. He scored the first touchdown in the A-Day game. I liked what I saw all over the field. Now, is that against the Baylor? No, it is not. But listen, this was a spring practice that's wrapping up that we didn't know a lot of these guys. And a lot of these guys and a lot of these spots, at least on that roster, I think are starting to be figured out at this point. Summer ball or summer workouts will be very important. And obviously the fall practices that will start up at the first part of August gearing up for that Baylor game in Atlanta. So, but I was encouraged by what I saw from Auburn's 8-8 football game.
Oh, I agree. I know we're running short on time, but Auburn's going to be anything but short on the basketball court this coming year. But
you're not kidding. It's going to be very, very big underneath. And I think Auburn's looking to add a little more size to its perimeter game. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn doesn't add a combo guard.
Right.
Someone that can play the one or the two for you with Auburn. I was a little surprised by Sebastian Williams-Adams' announcement this late in the transfer portal. I think Auburn was aware that was a possibility.
Yeah, he announced he's headed to Vandy today.
I saw that. As we were driving up, I saw that. So, yeah, and I wish all those guys, every one of those guys, Elijah Freeman at Texas and Philip Jovich out at UCLA and Seb up at Vanderbilt. Auburn will see two of those guys. We know that in the regular season coming up next season. I wish all those guys the very best. I enjoy getting to call their games and to be around those guys this year.
Andy, we're getting close to needing to get to a break. Always great to have you on with us. Let everybody know what's coming up with the Auburn Sports Network.
John Cohen talks about the North End Zone Project or Jordan-Hare North on the Talking Tigers podcast this week. Coming up next week, Red Hobart, Deputy AD for External Affairs, talks about the World Cup friendly that's coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium and all the things that are going into that behind the scenes, getting ready for what is going to be a phenomenal night of international soccer featuring one of the best soccer players in the world. That's all coming up on the Talking Tigers podcast. We're on the air tonight at 5:45 over on Wings 94.3. Then this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Friday at 6, Saturday at 6, Sunday afternoon at 2. We've got all the games over on Wings 94.3. Looking forward to a great weekend at home with the Oklahoma Sooners in town for the first time ever.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Andy. Again, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Have a great broadcast.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here on this Tuesday edition of The Drive. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
The Austin First Foundation presents Aces for Austin at the Grand National Golf Course at Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. All the money raised will help kids that have been diagnosed with rare disease in four impactful ways.
We've got Jake Crane, who will join us at the bottom of hour number two. But for the first half hour, our phone lines are open. Love for you to join in. Talk about anything you'd like in the world of sports. We're right back with the second hour of the Tuesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan with you here on this nice-looking Tuesday afternoon. Hope you're doing well, and we'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we had the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, on with us for most of the second half of hour number one, as there is quite a bit going on. The news yesterday from the transfer portal of Auburn adding a couple of players, having a player enter the portal. Sebastian Williams Adams had entered the portal. He has already found his landing spot, and that is Vanderbilt. So Auburn will play against two former players, two guys that were very, very important factors for Auburn in their run to the NIT title in the front court this past year as freshmen. Elijah Freeman was a sophomore. He will be at Texas, and then Sebastian Williams Adams will be at Vandy this next year. So we'll see. Auburn's still shopping in the portal and looking for at least a wing and a combo guard, and maybe more. But we will we'll see. We'll see how that goes basketball wise.
Yeah, I would imagine Auburn, you know, there's going to be some news in the next couple of days. I guess there's no real urgency here, except that you are competing with other teams
that
look to want to fill their rosters. And
yeah, you want to lock these guys down if you can.
I mean, there's risk in being too patient if you're both a player or a basketball team in the transfer portal.
Auburn's very much involved with three or four players for a couple of spots. And it's going to be, I think it'll be, the first guy they get in there will take care of a spot there, especially there at the three, I think.
Well, the belief was that Auburn hosted three players this weekend on official visits. Two of those players have committed to Auburn since the visits, Owen Freeman and Thomas Dowd. The other player is Adam Olson, who I think has lined up other visits too, but would seemingly fit with what Auburn's looking for at the two and the three. Adam Olson was a fantastic three-point shooter for
40% three-point shooter at 6'8" for South.
Really solid perimeter threat for South Alabama, and would seemingly fit with what Auburn's kind of looking for right now at the two and the three. I still wonder if they're going to be able to find point guard minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, just it.
Like Andy said, I mean, you'd love to get a combo guard, but how many minutes can you realistically say, look, here's what we have, 20 minutes? Maybe
I wonder if you have to bite the bullet and go into this season with the plan being Tahad and Overton at point, and then you address the roster elsewhere. You sort of assume right now you've got 40 minutes at the one, right? And then if Tahad's playing 30, then 10 minutes are going to Overton, and then it's a question of, okay, well, if Overton's playing 30 minutes a game and 10 of his minutes are going to be at point guard, 20 of those minutes are going to be at the two. And what are you doing with those? What do you do with those other 20 minutes?
Yeah,
at the two, and they will not be. And Tahad Pettiford's not an answer because you're already playing him 30 minutes at the one. So it's like Simon Walker's maybe a couple of those minutes at the two.
Yeah, I would think so. I think legitimately he was a guy that people forget this, but he's a guy that Stephen Pearl praised for his defense last summer before he was injured, and we saw what he can do offensively. It's not crazy to think that Simon Walker could give you, you know, double figure minutes.
And then you're also looking for minutes at the three, and potentially whoever you bring in at the three could also give you some minutes at the two, although you probably wouldn't want to overtax them with their minutes at the three. Although when you talk about the three, Thomas Dowd could get you some minutes there at the three as well. I still think you're looking for minutes.
He could, although he seems more of a 3-4. He's not the outside threat that I think you'd like to be able to have as well there at the three.
If you told me Auburn was circling a guy who looked like he was going to play 25 to 30 minutes a game at the two and the three, it seems like it would fit perfectly with what they have right now. Like what they've got with a clear-cut backcourt of Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton, with maybe a starting four and a starting five out of Freeman, Dowd, and Buki. I think
two of those three and Narcisse.
Like two of those three guys could be your two of those four guys could be your starting four and your starting five.
Right.
That leaves a pretty glaring hole right now at the three.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what Auburn does to. I think they've done. The front court was urgent.
Absolutely. Well,
retaining the back court and addressing the front court, pretty urgent needs. Losing Freeman and Sebastian.
Yeah, losing Elijah was huge.
Sebastian could have been providing some of those minutes, but you're right. Like losing Freeman suddenly blows a big hole in where you previously had your minutes allocated at the three. And it's about Auburn going and finding somebody. And like you said yesterday, I think somebody with some firepower from the outside. You love what you have with Overton and with Tahad. But I think the secret sauce has been like that. One of the things about the Jani Broome Final Four team was that Auburn routinely had 4 3-point shooting threats on the floor between Tahad. I mean, even Chaney's 3-point shot came around towards the end. But with when you could play Denver and Tahad and Miles Kelly and Chad and I mean it was like you had a barrage of outside threats that you could lean on. Jani's 3-point shot was reliable enough when he was open from the outside. And like I said, Chaney would even take like Auburn's ability to play with four real threats, like four shooters, it was something that made that team especially difficult to deal with. I think Auburn would love to get back to that. And you know, you've got several potential. I mean, if you had a 3-point shot at the three to Tahad and Overton and Thomas Dowd, you've got four, and then Buki is a pretty potent guy around the basket. Like you've got, it's easy to see where the pieces fit. Maybe they're not finished, and maybe it's two guys that we're talking about at the two and the three, right? Like depends on what Auburn would want to do. I would think that they'd want a starter caliber three to join the fold. We'll see if that's the next box to check off for the staff.
Yeah, and we were looking at it yesterday. I believe Auburn right now projects to have 10 players on scholarship. You can have as many as 15. I don't know why you need to get where you really need to get there. If you get to 12 or 13, I think you're fine as long as you get the right pieces coming in here. I mean, and I agree. The transfer portal, today is the last day for players to enter the transfer portal. But players, you know, they have a while, but I would think that, yes, you're probably going to be looking at when summer terms get started for Auburn. It's about, it's less than a month from now. So, I mean, you'd like to go ahead and have everybody lined up and have them in so that they can, you know, go ahead and go through orientation and start working out and start building some chemistry for this next year, because there's still going to be a lot of new parts next season. I mean, you really only have two players who played significant minutes returning in Tahad and Kevin Overton.
And I suppose Dwayne Aristode, the former.
I think he's definitely one of those possible pieces Auburn could add.
I think he would sort of fit as the three that we're talking about, the former five star who played at Arizona.
I think
he and
Roops DeVicious. Mantis Roops DeVicious are two guys. I don't know that you'd be able to get them both, But I think Auburn would definitely like one of those two.
Yeah, and the offers for Aristotle when he chose Arizona are crazy. Yes. It's a who's who of the best.
You're right. He was a five-star. He was one of the top players in the country coming out of high school just a year ago.
It does feel like that buzz has died down a little bit from a week ago. So I don't know.
I don't know if that means anything. There have been so many names that have been, you know, visiting, and now Auburn's added two of them. I don't know if that means that you know, Auburn and Aristotle are you know, drifting apart.
Tell you what, if you got Aristotle and Olsen,
oh my goodness,
this week I feel like you're done.
Yeah,
or close to it, and you've got yourself.
I'm ready to watch. You know, next week I want to watch practice. I want to see these guys.
Maybe you'd want. I mean, you know what?
I want to see it anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I guess at that point you're sort of penciling Simon in for minutes at the two.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, like I mean,
that'd be fine.
With some of those other guys, like I mean, you've got, and I mean, I suppose Aristotle could potentially play the two if you got him. Like Adam Olsen's a pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, you got some big dudes there that would need to slide over next to Overton, but. I don't know. That'd be like really interested to know who the next name off the board is for Auburn. The next piece they add to a roster that's getting closer, but is still probably unfinished.
Yeah, and Adam Olsen. Remember now he is a native of Canada.
That's right.
Who was at South Alabama, and I mean I've seen Washington and Indiana also involved and very very heavily interested and Adam Olsen as well. So just because he played in state this past year doesn't mean that, oh, he's going to stay close to home because home's Canada for the guy. So, I mean, we'll see. I would think he's getting close to a decision, though. I think he's made three or four visits. So I would think he's probably getting pretty close.
Again, big news we talked about in the first hour, Sebastian Williams-Adams choosing Vanderbilt, announcing that on social media earlier today, a day after he went into the portal, which came a little more than a week after he had signaled that he was coming back to Auburn. And it's a nice pickup for Vanderbilt, a guy who clearly has a ton of potential. I think a player the coaches wanted back at Auburn.
Oh, extremely athletic 6'8" guy. You'd love to have him.
Yeah, my guess would be that from everyone I talk to, the sense I get is that the coaching staff, including Steven, they wanted Sebastian back. They wanted Elijah Freeman back.
Yes, indeed.
Probably could not make it work at the price both of those players wanted to return. I think especially after re-signing Tahad and Kevin Overton, it maybe made it a little bit tougher to meet the price of all four of those players. And I guess Filip Jovic also, you got the sense, was a financial situation as well. It wasn't so much the coaching staff wanted those guys to
I don't think by any means Auburn encouraged them to leave so they could make room for more experienced players.
No, I think Auburn wanted the roster continuity of these guys that they'd been developing for the last year.
I think very important. Yeah. You'd love to be able to have guys for a couple of years.
And guys who had just played a season with Tahad and Kevin, you know, and you have the chemistry there built in, and said you have to sort of microwave that chemistry. You have to find a way to get it without having played a full season together. But it's not... I mean, I don't think anything. I know people are pointing out that Sebastian wasn't in the portal very long, right, and chose Vanderbilt after just a day as sort of evidence that something nefarious happened. I think that's just business.
That's the way it is.
It's college basketball.
That's the way it is now. Look. I mean, your folks and my folks may have conversations, and nothing may come of it.
Right.
May not go into the portal, but. But yeah, I mean that's the way it is now.
And I would not portray Auburn as the victim in these situations either, because I think Auburn's been plenty aggressive in going after players in the transfer portal, including, I mean, there was a kerfluffle earlier this year about Auburn sitting courtside at Auburn coaches sitting courtside at different mid-major conference tournaments, and maybe scouting guys then. So I mean, it's not. Again, this is the way it's...
And you think Auburn's the only team that might have done that?
Exactly. And you think Vanderbilt's the only team that maybe talked to somebody and tried to convince him to go into the portal? Probably not. And so it's, it's cutthroat. And Sebastian, you know, second year in a row, you've thought you've had a guy.
Right.
And then he changes his mind and decides maybe there's, you know, greener grass somewhere else. I imagine Sebastian's season at Vanderbilt will go... more smoothly than Chad's.
Than CBM's.
Than Chad's at USC.
How about it's like the three name guys?
Yeah. It is interesting how that.
Stay away from those for long term.
So we got to watch out for Sly Smith-Reed, right? That's the new one there on the Auburn football team. But it's got to be a little bit disappointing to lose players that you were hoping were sort of big picture pieces of the answer, but I think Auburn's doing a pretty good job replacing the players that they've lost and going into the portal and adding some pieces that make sense to this year's team. And I still think with Dehod and Overton in the fold, you're returning more than a lot of other teams in the SEC. Not everybody, because we were just talking about Florida. Florida gets the news about, Houck's back, Kondo's coming back, and it sounds like Chinyelu he's going to test the draft, but I think he's playing college basketball too. Is Todd Golden back?
Yeah.
That's reportedly the top candidate for the Golden State Warriors. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in Gainesville.
Yep. So Auburn's new GM Brian Coleman has got a lot to be keeping up with and in charge of there, and I'm sure he has no small part in Auburn's roster development as they continue. All right, we're about 15 minutes into hour number two. We'll go ahead and get to our first break. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to check in with Jake Crane at the bottom of the hour. So if you've got some thoughts, questions, comments, give us a call, 334-321-1390, as we get to our first break here in hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive with Bill and Dan, and let's get right to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We got, is it Pat? Hey, Pat.
Yep. Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day out there. I went to the game with my brother, and we actually got to sit where the rich people did in one of the booths up there. So it's nice. It's nice seeing what we're missing all these years, but I like being in the stands. I just love it.
I like the feel of the crowd. I mean, at times, it's great and the amenities are great, but sometimes you sort of lose that feeling of really actually being there.
Yeah, and it's screaming. I mean, I don't know if they scream much in there, but I live because we're right next to the student section, so we can stand and scream the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ever since I was in college, that's just what I've done. we've never stopped at every single game that it's close. We're always standing and screaming. But no, I was thoroughly excited about the offense. It's kind of crazy because just compared to last year, it's like we couldn't run a slant. Whether the receiver would just drop it off his hands or it'd be bounced up in the air. It just seemed like it was run down the field and maybe we'll throw a back shoulder catch or an impossible catch or maybe we'll throw a bomb every once in a while. It just seemed like there was no, like, it almost seemed like it was just like backyard brawl, backyard throwing the ball and hoping that a play will work. Whereas these plays, I saw wide receivers that were open. And I saw quarterbacks throwing to areas where almost like the receiver was not even running a pattern at some point, like just like doing what like Travis Kelce does or Tom Brady's quarterbacks would do, just run to the open area and turn around and then they would hit him. And when the quarterback was rolling out, especially Tia, he was good at like rolling and then firing it to the open area to where the receivers adjusted. You know, if the ball wasn't perfect, they weren't just like, oh, woe is me, I can't catch it. It's like they were actually making a step and catching it. Mm-hmm. I felt like that's what Spencer did a lot of. You know, if the ball wasn't perfect, he adjusted and was able to, on the fly, just go get the ball and turn it into a positive, as opposed to last year, like if we didn't catch it perfectly in motion, the play was a negative play.
Pat, you'd be surprised by the way Cody and Larry Scott get on them about drops in practice too. I mean, it's drilled into these guys that like that's something that just there's too much competition. You can't be, you know, if you want to be on the field, there's too many other guys that aren't dropping the ball.
Yeah, and routes aren't rounded. I mean, when they run them, they know where they're supposed to be, and the quarterback knows where they're supposed to be, too.
I'm glad Spencer was able to put some of that on display, because that's what we've been seeing going to practice throughout the spring, and he just has that extra little bit of magic, seemingly. You know, I want to be careful, because he's a true freshman, and it's a spring game, but he seemingly has that it factor for receivers.
He's been going against guys that are really SEC caliber there in the secondary. I mean, you saw him. He was going against the ones and Auburn's. I think Auburn's defense is going to be at least as good as last year's.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought the defense was great. I mean, I thought Jared Smith, that one play was. That was NFL material right there.
You've been talking about Jared Smith since he got to campus, Pat.
Oh my God, he's been one of my top four faves, and I told him last year. But I said, you're going to be an NFL player. There's no question. Just please play for us for a while. You know, and honestly, like that play, I think if you threw that play 100 times, it's probably knocked down 50% of the time. 50 out of 100 is probably a good play. Would have been to knock it down.
Yeah.
But maybe 1 out of 100, you would catch that ball with one hand. Like, it's almost like it was just unbelievable. I don't really put that interception on Byram as much as that was just like an incredible play. That was just an incredible play. But yeah, I agree with what y'all said about Byram. You know, it's like with Cam, and we all going to go back and. You know, about, oh well, this guy did it, or this coach came from nowhere, and he was able to be successful. I feel like everybody always tries to do that. I don't believe that at all. This is not about Cam Newton. This is about his game. It's like anybody. If you're a point guard and you're great at breaking a guy down, if you never break the guy down, then that's half your game's gone. You know, if all you're doing is just jump shooting, well, then you're not going to be as good. I mean, so to me, he is a combo scenario. His game intensifies because it's kind of like Mahomes. Him getting out of the pocket and doing his little crazy plays is 50% of what makes him great. If you take that away from him and he's just a pocket passer, well, he's not probably much better than the next good quarterback. So I feel like he's a combo, and that's going to be the key, is keeping him healthy. But I do like – I thought Tia was really good about getting out of the pocket and making good plays and accurate plays. So if Byram did get hurt for a couple games or for a half or something, I feel like we still could win those games. I don't think it's like, you know, desperation. And the running backs, oh my God.
Well, on Tia, before you get to the running backs there, the point you made on Tia, like I'm really interested to see like sort of Tia's development, and I love the idea that you have a genuine contender to be the starter in 27 mm-hmm. on the team right now.
Yeah.
And you're not just like saying, all right, well, after the season's over, we're going to the portal. And that, cause that's been the plan for several years seemingly. And it's been the plan in a lot of places. And just the thought that you can actually develop someone. And it's part of what makes the basketball players leaving so disappointing, is that you thought you were going to be able to coach and develop these guys for multiple years and reap the benefits of that. I'm not eager to see Tia on the field instead of Byram Brown.
No, you know but I mean? Like, but hopefully you get opportunities where he gets in and can get his feet wet.
Sure,
you know.
But I know that, and like I think some people like they hear Tia played well and Byram kind of struggled.
Byram was Byram was playing against the ones and Tristan was playing against the twos and threes. But he's still got a lot of talent. There's no question. He's got arm talent.
I think there's something there.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up one thing didn't even think about. But you know, they're talking about how Deuce isn't happy over in Ole Miss. He wants to come back. But I mean, honestly, I don't know that if that game if Deuce was playing out there, I don't know that he would have been better than Tia on that. I mean. I don't know. I don't know that. Tia seemed to know the offense pretty darn good for the short amount of period that he's ran it. You know, because I mean he was we were moving the ball with him for sure. But
if Deuce wanted to leave, I was hoping that he could get on the field wherever he goes. And obviously this Trinidad thing has sort of complicated that at Ole Miss. And I mean, on one hand,
has the NCAA. Are they still trying to?
I think they're done on Trinidad. Okay. I thought that's settled, and he's playing this year. I could have that wrong, but I thought that was one where he's sort of. Yeah, I mean, check to see if I'm wrong, but I thought that was sort of coming back. Yeah, he's in.
I know he's planning on coming back. Yeah. I was of the opinion that the NCAA was still wanting to fight that.
No, I'm pretty sure that's the reason why Deuce is mad.
If he wasn't sure
that he was coming back, I don't think Deuce would be mad yet. They said he's just mad, but I feel like I wanted to call his dad, you know, as much as I want, because my brother knows his dad, because we talked to him one night when they visited on their recruiting trip, and his dad's just a really cool dude. But I just wanted to tell him, it's like, man, there's about a 75% chance that Trinidad's coming back before you go to that place, you know. Because if he comes back, there's no way you're going to play over there. It just seemed like it would have been, just on hindsight, him learning this offense for a year and then coming in next year. I feel like, but I don't know if he comes back next year that he's going to beat out Tia.
The belief.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know about the rules for him coming back either. You know what I mean? Like, there's the portal's closed, yeah, right. and he, you know, it would be.
I don't see where a waiver would be.
And if he were to go, right. After the season, you know what I mean? He could go somewhere else, but he needs to get on the field. Like, that's the thing. As far as for Trinidad, the belief is that if the NCAA wanted to, he won a lawsuit back in February that he won a hearing. And the belief is that if the NCAA wanted to appeal that through the Mississippi Supreme Court,
the Mississippi Supreme Court ruled that he could return. So the only option they would have would be the U.S. Supreme Court,
right? And if he wanted to appeal that, it would probably not be settled before the end of this season, and therefore be pretty irrelevant for Trinidad.
So as I read that, that's what I see. So I mean, the NCAA still wasn't happy. The other thing that could be a factor is if the NCAA did get past the five to play five with no exceptions, because Trinidad's looking for a sixth year. But that's not making Deuce happy right now.
And I wonder if they would be, even if you get the five to play five,
they'd probably say, okay, the exceptions that have been ruled to this point would stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they go to the Supreme Court, they're going to lose. NCAA needs to not go there. I think they need to keep anything as far away as
you think folding on this one is a good strategy for them?
I still think, Pat, that you know, we've talked about this one for a while. I think the NCAA is at some point going to get that five for five, but anybody who'd already been granted an exception to that, I don't think would have to worry. But I think that five for five thing is probably coming because the majority of the schools want that. And if your members all want that, then they'll probably be able to get that.
Well, if you want to know the honest truth, then just, it's like when you're trying to make a deal, you know, I just feel like in my mind, if they would do 6 for 6, and I know that's not make everybody happy that wants to do 4 and 5, but if you did 6 for 6, there probably would be nobody ever challenge it. Mm-hmm. And so that would probably stick. There'll still be somebody that's like Trinidad going for year 6 that would challenge it. The key is to get nobody to challenge it, and that's the problem. And
yeah.
If you ever get someone to challenge it and they go all the way to Supreme Court, then it's locked in stone for everybody. So they don't want to go there, I can tell you that. But you know, but anyway, I just feel great. I know obviously it wasn't perfect, but it was night and day to me on offense. It was night and day to difference, and I feel like that's going against a good defense. So I couldn't be happier. I mean, I'm almost happier than if we had Lane Kiffin right now. So kudos to Cohen and however we got this done. But now we may be proven wrong, but I have not been this excited. I was not excited at all for Hugh Freeze. And Harsin, I was mildly kind of okay with this. This isn't a horrible hire. I feel like after a day game, I feel like out of 100, I would say probably a 95 in my mind of a hire. He's got the potential to be the next great coach, and his attitude and the way he's doing things. And you saw that after the game, his little speech on the thing, that was incredible. I mean, he just says the right things, and it's not snake oil salesman kind of like the last two kind of were.
Good stuff, Pat. Great hearing from you. We've got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane joins us when we come back. Stick with us.
1-800-522-4502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Yeah, we're running a little behind right now, so we're very pleased that we get a few minutes with our good buddy from Crane and Cone, and that's Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. This is one of the few times I'm actually on vacation right now in Antigua without.
Oh, wow! I can't believe you answered the phone then, Jake.
Well, look, anything for you guys. You know that.
Oh man, we really appreciate a little bit of the time. It's been a fun last few days. A lot of things going on. I mean, SEC baseball is hot, but the transfer portal has been moving. And then, of course, Auburn wrapped up its spring football with A-Day on Saturday. Did you get a chance to see any of the highlights or anything of that?
Yeah, I did. My biggest thing, Bill, and if you've ever been in it, and I think any head coach will tell you this is the truth, you just want to get through it healthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got a good idea of kind of what you have at that point. I think Auburn accomplished that. And I will say this. Anybody that's freaking out about the Byron Brown stat line for A-Day, you need to stop, because I don't think you really understand what the spring game is built for and what it limits. Imagine if you're a three-point shooter. Imagine if you were Kevin Overton and I told you going into a game you can only drive, you can't shoot threes. Well, that's going to limit the way you look and the way you play. So I'm happy Auburn made it through relatively healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to see some of the young guys get after it. I thought it was a very productive spring for Auburn and a really good springboard, pun intended, to fall.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of – I mean, obviously Byron Brown gets the bulk of the attention, but there were some breakout candidates on both sides of the ball. For Auburn, younger players, guys in their first or second year of college football that could have a big impact on this year. I think you saw a couple of them in the MVP winners. Deshaun Spencer, the freshman receiver, who just looks like he has that it factor, Jake. You know, that magic thing that can separate two nearly
identical. He's always open, and he catches the ball.
Right. I mean,
he can make something happen.
That thing that can separate, you know, two nearly identical receivers, right, is that he gets open. Right, it's like Moneyball, and he gets on base.
Yeah, when it matters. Can you do it when it matters? I mean, there's a lot of guys that are good in practice. I think Deshaun Spencer's come on the scene and said, "Listen, just put me in the game, I'll make plays for you."
Sure, mm-hmm. and then defensively, a trendy breakout candidate, a five-star out of high school who didn't have an enormous first year, but sort of is you know, things are slowing down and getting a little more comfortable for him. Jared Smith was all over the field on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, he's got more twitch than Aiden Ross, if you're really looking at it. He's the guy we've talked about a bunch. I know Mark Freeman really well. He coached my brother in high school, who coached Jared at Thompson. Right. This kid has all the tools. If he puts it together, he's not only a first-round pick, he's probably a top-five pick. Mm-hmm. And him having a good game should make Auburn fans feel really, really good about having a guy that can come off the edge and be multiple and be versatile, be good against the run, be good against the pass. He has a chance to be he's so much better than Keldrick Falk, it's hilarious.
And you've seen sometimes a player takes a year or two, right? You know, those guys and people maybe overreact.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn, I would say Auburn even had one of those a year ago in Amaris Williams. Right, who ended up at Georgia, and it's tremendously sad that he's probably going to miss this season with the torn ACL, because that's a super talented defensive lineman in his own right. But he had a tumultuous and fairly unproductive first year at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the coaches were talking about was the different player he was in year two. And I think there's some of that going on with Jared Smith, on top of the fact that he's just prototypical. Like he's the size, and I mean he checks every box as far as measurables.
You look at length, you look at the ability to bend, you look at the ability to be physical. There's a reason he was rated what he was rated. I think he has a chance to be the best defensive end at Auburn that we've had in a long time, in a really long time.
Yeah, this I said it a little while ago, Jake. I mean, I think this defense has got a chance to be pretty darn good. I mean, you've got quite 100%. A few returnees, and so many of them are like second year guys too.
Well, and that was one of the biggest parts about keeping DJ too, is mm-hmm. that they're not having to learn a new system. I'm telling you right now, and I'd be, you can quote me on it, you can put it on a tombstone, whatever. Auburn will have a top 15 defense in the country. If the offense averages 26 or more points a game, Auburn may win. Auburn may make the college football playoff. That's how talented this defensive group is. I know there's not a, and there shouldn't be. There's a lot of reservation about Auburn and doing this and doing that. Don't let us beat Baylor by 20. We beat Baylor by 20. We may start running shop again. I'm just, it's a new day. The soft stuff's been moved to the side. Golich isn't playing that anymore. It's not about trying to be the best person in the pastor group or in youth, you know, whatever group. It's about going out there and, for lack of a better term, beating somebody to death with it. And I think that's what Auburn's going to be.
Jake, I know you're pressed for time. We don't want to take up too much of your vacation. NFL draft this week. First round Thursday night looks like. I mean, are there any mysteries or any storylines you're watching? Because it feels like beyond Mendoza, obviously at one, you know, there are a couple different directions you could go.
Yeah, the quarterback's always the most interesting thing in the NFL draft, right? What I'm interested in is how many Ohio State guys get taken in the top 10 picks. I really don't think, and again, they didn't win at all, so you're not going to get that level of appreciation. But when you look at what Ohio State had on defense, they gave up not – I don't care what your schedule is, if you play in the SEC or the Big Ten. You give up 9 points a game for basically the whole year. That's absolutely ridiculous. So, look, the draft, it's always going to be quarterback heavy. That's the way it's built. But I want to see how many Ohio State guys go early.
Is Simpson going in the first round?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Mm.
I understand why teams are skeptical of a guy who only started however many games in college Ty Simpson
Danny
started.
He had no run game.
Oh.
And was basically his bladder was exploded for half the year. Like, the Alabama only won what they won because Ty Simpson was that good in his first year.
Oh, no, and I think there's a lot there. The only reservation I think I would have right now as an NFL team would be that there's a mixed bag of guys who only start, you know, one season before making the jump.
Yeah.
And you seem to learn a lot on the field. And, you know, I think that if Ty Simpson had come back to college, he would be maybe the favorite to win the Heisman this year, depending on what situation.
Well, I mean, Miami offered him $8 million.
Yeah.
So it's
interesting that he's deciding to stick in the NFL draft no matter what. And I'm curious to see.
Well, it's a bad class. Right?
Yeah.
Like, well, what are you going to do? Go out next year when it's a lot more thick? I mean, I think he just made the right business decision.
Yeah, and we'll see if it ends with him going in the first round on Thursday night. Keldrick,
I think he will.
Keldrick's also a guy, you know, there's been mixed it feels like a wide spectrum of projections as far as how Thursday night could go for Keldrick Falk. I've seen some folks taking him in the top 10, including the pick the Giants just traded for Dexter Lawrence. Like, I know there's folks talking about Keldrick maybe at 10 there. Could be a little bit later in the draft than 10, but folks seem to think he's a first-round pick.
Well, here's my thing on Keldrick Falk. Has all the ability in the world. He's got the size. He's got the athleticism. I don't think he did enough at Auburn when it mattered. I thought he was just a guy. He was just a guy that, like, he made a couple plays, but he's got to go to a team where he's not the guy. I don't think he can be the guy. I don't think he's physical enough. If you watch him, and again, nobody's saying he's a bad player or he shouldn't play in the NFL. I just don't think he's got that dog in him like that, to be honest. I mean, if we're being honest, I can sit here and lie and tell you how great he is and all this other. I don't think he's super physical. I thought he was. When it came down to it, when Auburn needed to make plays on defense, when it mattered the most, I'm not saying in general, when it mattered the most, this guy was nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Because I grew up watching Quentin Groves. I grew up watching all these guys that when they were the guy on the defense line, Nick Fairley, they made an impact. I thought he was just okay. I think he's overrated, to be honest.
I will say those players had better offenses. like backing them up than.
Well,
I mean,
but again, I know
it's
don't
not.
Matter.
I think
that don't matter because you're not playing against your offense.
You're not. Like, but when you're in a situation in the fourth quarter where your defense has to do everything right because the offense. Like, I get what you're saying, and I think
Dan, let me ask you this: who would you take right now, Derek Hall or Keldrick Falk?
Ooh. Probably Hall. I mean, Hall's been a starter in the NFL
for
a long time.
And the guy's got all the measurables. He didn't show up when it mattered.
You're not the only person to wonder why Keldrick didn't have more production. Like, I think that's fair for a guy who
we were told he was the greatest thing ever, and when it mattered the most, he disappeared. And I know NFL, I've talked to NFL guys, they see that whenever he faced somebody that he didn't beat at birth, he didn't beat him. And to me, if I'm going to draft you in the first round, you bet I would take Reuben Bain with one leg over Keldrick Falk with all
wow. That's
you're not worried about the short arms or whatever it is with Reuben Bain that people are making?
No,
nonsense.
I saw you show up when it mattered. This guy just talked about it. When I watched Damon Wilson from Missouri punk Auburn's whole team at the coin toss in overtime, and then I watched Keldrick Falk get the whole team together and try and motivate them. Nobody listened, and you got beat. That tells me all I need to know. I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a bad player. He ain't about it like that. That's what I think. If I was drafting, I'm not taking him.
Jake, obviously, I hope you enjoy the vacation. What's the schedule with Crane and Cone?
Oh, dude, we've got a ton of stuff coming out, though. Tomorrow we have our Contenders Pretenders series coming out with David Pollack. Just head on over to YouTube. It's Crane and Cone. Come check us out. And we're always putting out content. So it's whether we're here or not, it's always coming out.
Man, it's good to know. Good to know. Well, enjoy, man. Again, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us.
Of course. Of course. I'm about to go in here and hang out with the fam.
I hear you. All right. Enjoy, man.
See you, buddy.
Yep. Talk to you next time. Jake Crane joining us here on the Tuesday Drive. That's nice of him, man. Mm-hmm. Nice of him on
to take the call, yeah,
to answer the phone and talk with us. So we appreciate that.
I don't do that.
Nor do I.
Yeah.
We'll get to our final break here on the Tuesday Drive, so stick with us.
Massive International Soccer is coming to Auburn for the first time. Two proud nations.
Appreciate that, Coach.
Yeah,
of course, Auburn baseball coming up tonight. As a matter of fact, pregame already on. First pitch shortly after 6 o'clock, and you can hear it over on Wings 94.3. We've got 3 or 4 minutes left. Let's get back to the Drive hotline, and Mitch is hanging on. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. A couple things. First thing, I know you guys are big music guys, but 10 years ago today, we lost Prince.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Man, time flies.
I thought that, I mentioned something to Brian yesterday. Like, I thought that might be the musing, just because I know he likes to do it on the exact weekend or the exact day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, ten years ago today, the passing of his royal badness himself.
Yeah, probably, I mean, in my opinion, the greatest singer-songwriter ever. I mean, there's no telling
how
many songs. Yeah, and I mean, I heard there was hundreds, maybe thousands of songs in his vault after he passed away that, he never recorded but were written down. So.
Yeah, and on 96.3 W Lee, you'll hear multiple Prince songs that weren't performed by Prince. You'll hear I Feel For You by mm-hmm. Chaka Khan, Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor, Manic Monday. Yeah. He wrote a lot of stuff for other artists.
Yes, I've actually got a CD of the songs he wrote that the other artists recorded, like Manic Monday.
Right.
I've actually got a CD that's got him singing Manic Monday.
Cool.
Oh wow. Yeah, I didn't know if he'd ever released Manic Monday as a song or if he wrote it for them, because I was gonna say I think the other two were songs that
Mitch has got a bootleg.
Because I think the other two were songs that Prince had recorded and performed, and then the other artists covered them, but. No, that's cool. I don't know if I've ever heard Prince singing Manic Monday.
Yeah, I've even seen a video of it at Paisley Park with him, because he had his own stage and recording. I mean, he had everything there, but just wanted to mention that because, I loved his royal badness, as you call him, Dan, but I heard, listened to the A-Day game, and the halftime show, they had an assistant athletic director or whatever, that they've already sold 62,000 tickets for the soccer match.
Mm-hmm. No, this thing's going to be massive.
No kidding. There's still some available.
Yep.
Okay. Now, how many people does Jordan Hare hold now? I know it's over 88,000.
I'll say it's. Right? I thought it was somewhere in the neighborhood 88 or 89.
It's just over 88, yeah. I believe.
Okay. Well, ought to be spectacular. I hope the weather, cooperates with us. I'd hate to watch it in a rainstorm because you know how it is in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
It's thunderstorm.
Yeah, liable to be pretty warm as well. Good hearing from you, Mitch. We are out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Our thanks to Andy Burcham, Jake Crane, and all of our listeners.
Should have Jason Caldwell and yep. Adam Cole tomorrow to break down a little baseball and everything else going on in the world of Auburn athletics.
That's right. Speaking of baseball, you can tune over to Wings 94.3 and hear Auburn Samford from the Hoover Met. That about to get started, but that's we're about to get done. We're out of time here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Yes, we will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.